Welcome to episode 303 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Tish
and Dr. T. This episode, we give our verdict on the Dolphins' performance so far this season. We discuss possible expansion to Perth and much more. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. All right, welcome to episode 303 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the greatest game of all, rugby league. This is rugby league for the people. I'm your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. Tish, how are you doing this week?
Dr. T, I am doing well. What a round of NRL footy we had over the weekend. Wild, wet, exciting, some really great plays, some disappointing moments, but I think it was absolutely fantastic. But the season's heating up, and can't wait for the rest of the season. But before we begin, I just want to actually shout out to Nick Parslow. He told me he was listening to the show. He's a big fan of the Rugby League Republic. He did ask, because he's a loyal Raiders supporter, that we talk less about the Tigers and the Eels and actually mention Canberra for once. So Nick, we will have Canberra spotlighted very soon, but maybe not this week. But I'm doing well, Dr. T. How are you doing?
I have been better as an Eels fan. To your mate, I'll have to say, look, you know, bear with me just for five more minutes as I unleash on the Eels in the next tackle. It's not a good happy place that the Eels are in at the moment. It's not paradise. It is.
It's persecution. Yeah.
Wait, paraplegic. I don't know. Paris. I don't know what's going on.
Paris. Look,
but it's, no, it's all right. It's terrible. It's terrible. Put it that way. but look, yeah. we can talk about that in a minute. But yeah, look, apart from that, look, a really good round of footy. There was lots of controversy and obviously lots of things that we can discuss going forward. But and look, we're also going to pay tribute as well later in the episode to Keith Barnes, one of the Tigers' greatest patriarchs, I would say, in the history of the Balmain Tigers. And you know, we're going to pay a bit of a tribute to him as well. So, look, without any further ado, let's get into tackle number one, where we review the round five of the NRL. Here we go. All right, round five of the NRL started with a very high-scoring back-and-forth and entertaining game between the Storm and the Broncos. It ended up 34-32, Storm over the Broncos at Amy Park in front of a very healthy 21 or so thousand fans. On Friday night, we had a very poor crowd in a very wet Sydney Accor Stadium, saw the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs 30, overcoming a late comeback by the Sydney Roosters to 26. Well done there to the Bulldogs. Then Newcastle, similarly wet Newcastle, 30-10 over St. George Illawarra Dragons. Well done to the Knights. And then we saw, one particular capitulation of the South Sydney Rabbitohs on Saturday at Accor Stadium as well in Sydney at the hands of the New Zealand Warriors, 34-4 against South Sydney Rabbitohs, who are really on a downward spiral this part of the season. Then we saw an upset, I would say, Manly 32-18 over the Penrith Panthers. A bit of an upset, I would say, given how well the Panthers have been travelling this year and how patchy the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles have been. But it was a good crowd there, 17,000 or so in front of a home crowd there for Manly at Four Points Park. The Dolphins, in front of 22,000, defeated the West Tigers 26-16 in the Saturday evening game. On Sunday, we had two games, the Cowboys 35-22 over the Gold Coast Titans. in front of 18 or so thousand at Queensland Country Bank Stadium. And then finally, the Canberra Raiders, a massive shellacking of my Parramatta Eels, 41-8 in front of 13 and almost 14,000 there at GIO Stadium in Canberra. And obviously the Sharks had the bye. And just as well, because we saw, look, for me, a few games of the round, the contenders, but I think the Rabbitohs and the Eels slide down the ladder and down to oblivion has been really dramatic this far into the season. I think we spoke last time about the Eels having a 2-2 record. You may as well just throw that out the window, because it looked like they're at 0-5 at the moment. That's how they look like they're playing at the moment. And without going too far into it, we can see later whether this is a Mitchell Moses effect or other things going on. I dare say there are other things going on that we need to address. But look, the Dolphins doing it against, I have to say, the Tigers really put up a spirited effort. And despite losing, I think they lost with grace and they lost with, pretty good defense there. Manly and Penrith, really, good quality game, a lot of back and forth. Manly ended up being dominant in the end, but, the Penrith Panthers gave as good as they got. I don't know what to say. Is the high scoring lacking of defense, Storm versus Broncos, star-studded matchup, would that be classified as game of the round? I kind of was thinking the defense could have been a bit better from both sides. But the attack was certainly absolutely amazing. And we saw, I believe in that match, we may have seen another contender for try of the year, I believe. Am I mistaken or am I thinking the wrong match? Tish, what are your thoughts about match of the round and other kind of highlights or lowlights?
Yeah, look, I'd say match of the round for me is definitely the Storm and Broncos game. I thought it was high-quality attack. And I think these are more attack orientated teams, probably some of the defensive patterns and stuff like that are probably what both teams need to work on, because they both leaked five tries. I think both scored five. No, in fact, the Storm scored six and the Broncos only scored five. So a bit of goal kicking from Adam Reynolds and Tony Staggs kept them in. So I think that was definitely the match of the round, and attacking footy is what we want to see as well. In terms of the probably the best performances, I'm going to have to go with both Manly and Canberra. I think that they both really displayed what they're made of. Obviously, the Panthers have, I know they lost the first round, but they've been that they've been destroying teams, and we even thought that Schneider coming in while Cleary is injured was going to derail the Panthers. It didn't in the first week, but second week Manly were able to pull off a victory. And Canberra, I even though the Tigers they beat the Tigers in round one, I still didn't think in round two, I didn't think their attack was that great, particularly after the first game against Newcastle. But this round, their back five, Xavier Savage and some of the other players that they had, they were amazing. And a forward pack, and I thought, wow, I was really quite impressed with both those teams. So that's going to be interesting. And I think, the disappointing parts for me for this round was obviously the performance of South Sydney. I think that's been absolutely, they had a few players sent off and things like that. I think the Bulldogs Roosters game, obviously a bit of a surprise. The Roosters came back in the end, even though they had a player sent off for most of the game. So down to 12. And even the last 10 minutes, they were down to 11. And they still went really close to beating the Bulldogs. So, not too sure what to make of that. And only 7,000 people to a Core Stadium. It was raining very heavily, but, not really. We talked about the highs of the crowds the week before. This round was a little harder to get a good crowd in because of, obviously, the weather conditions. But I still think that, maybe playing a game 6 o'clock in Sydney at a Core Stadium on a Friday night is not the best idea, considering how hard it gets to move around in the city sometimes, and to get out to a Core Stadium for because yeah, of course, stadium. That's the big Olympic stadium. So, kind of think that they might need to look at how they sort of schedule that thing. So, I'd say that's kind of where I would say this round was, and you know, definitely the results of this round have shaken up the ladder significantly, right? There's a surprise team on top.
Absolutely. All right. So, look, shall we move on to the next tackle? We're going to focus on, spotlights on old school coaches. This is tackle number two. All right. So, look, old school coaches. So there's quite a few coaches in the league at the moment that I think it's fair to say they're from the old era, let's just say from the 80s, 90s, and have been around the block for a little bit. There's been the debate recently has been about the whether coaches that come from a particular system, especially the modern coaches that are trained like under the Panthers system of coaching, has led to a couple of kind of assistant coaches becoming NRL head coaches in their own right with varying degrees of success. Obviously, we've seen with the Warriors and the Bulldogs varying degrees of success recently with former Panthers alumni. And then you've got a situation of, for example, someone who is old school like Desi Hasler, who has had some success in coaching over the years and is seen as someone who's got a name and was taken up as a potential saviour of the Titans. And it doesn't seem to be going too well at the moment. And there's been some questions around whether, you know, is it that the style of modern play is it doesn't really suit the old school coaching style of a Des Hasler, where he just, gives players an absolute ribbing at halftime, smashes things because he wants to, you know, instill a bit of the Tommy Radonigus kind of, you know, aggro and mongrel and get them fired up and that kind of thing. Versus, you know, look, he's not the only old school coaches. People like Wayne Bennett, who's been around the block as well, but has a vastly different reputation and way of managing his emotions. So I guess the question comes down to this, Tish. Old school coaches, the old school meaning, you know, they get in there and try and get emotion out of players and use the halftime speech as an opportunity to kind of motivate them, versus the more modern coach where it's more about, you know, statistics and making sure that players are happy and satisfied, because that's how you get their best performance. You know, you got high performance coaches, high performance, specialists as well, physio, psychologists, all these sort of things. Whereas old school didn't really do all that. So I guess the question is, Tish, with Desi Hasler as an example of someone who's coaching the current bottom place team versus Wayne Bennett, who's currently coaching the current top place team, what's the deal? Titans aren't really bottom. They're kind of almost equal bottom. Rabbitohs are actually down the bottom. But let's just, for all intents and purposes, Hasler is my example of the opposite of Bennett in terms of outcomes and success this year. What do you think, Tish? A lot to unpack there, but what are your thoughts about the old school style coaching?
Okay, all right. So look, I think what we need to do is just I've got the data burst of all the coaches up, right? The 2024 coaches, right? So there are two that are born in the 1950s, Craig Bellamy and Wayne Bennett. Wayne Bennett in 1950 and Bellamy 1959. And then there are another four that are born in the 1960s, which is Des Hasler at 61, Shane Flanagan, Ricky Stewart, Kevin Walters, They're all born in the 1960s. And then Cleary is at 7, born in 71, which is kind of like a four-year gap. So would you say that that six of Kevin Walters, Ricky Stewart, Shane Flanagan, Des Hasler, Craig Bellamy and Wayne Bennett, that's the old school that we're talking about here, right?
I mean, I guess Wayne Bennett more so because he was like, I mean, he was kind of coaching back when all those other players just started their careers.
Exactly.
In a way.
Exactly.
Bennett is definitely the older.
He's an outlier, right? Yeah. He's 9 years. Yeah. There's a 90 difference between him and the next youngest coach, which is Bellamy, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So I think, because if I look at everybody younger than Kevin Walters, you know, Cleary, Brad Arthur, Seibold, Jason Demetrio, Trent Robinson, that's where the new school is coming from. Like, I don't see any of those, with even Serraldo and Benji Marshall, both born in the 80s, right? So Andrew Webster too. So that's, you know, so yeah. So I think that's where you go. So look, out of that, I'd say that, look, where Wayne, I think, is different to some of the other school coaches, I think he really focuses more on the personal relationship aspect of the game. And just really trying to develop the individual, not just develop the player, if that makes sense. And I think he operates with sort of a bigger team of trainers and personal trainers and sports scientists to do more of the actual, coaching and training of the team. But then I'll look at the Bellamy, Craig Bellamy, Des Hasler, and I could probably, Shane Flanagan, Ricky Stewart, and I think Kevin Walters is slightly different, but I want to take those. That group, I feel like they're very hands-on and very pedantic about what they want, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that it works if you've got the personnel, but if you don't have the personnel, it doesn't work. So I think, like, if I take Ricky Stewart, for example, Canberra doing quite well right now, and I think part of it is that Ricky Stewart has got the nucleus of the team that he wants. And people who didn't survive Ricky Stewart, they've kind of all left Canberra, right? I think that's kind of where that's it. And you could see that it's basically, Canberra as a team play like Ricky did as a player, right? I think with Shane Flanagan, he's had mixed results because I think that, he can't recreate that same atmosphere yet as what he had at the Sharks, but they're in a rebuilding period anyway. So I feel like there is going to be inconsistency while I get that going. So I don't think that's really a judge. I think where Dez's problem is that I think the Gold Coast Titans were doing fairly well. They've been in the finals in the last few years, right? And then they kind of had an off season, and then, he was sort of appointed coach midway through next season to get, to bring his style in. But I don't think they've had the roster changes yet to be able to make those changes. And that's why they haven't won a game yet, because I just don't think that they're ready to completely adopt Dez's way. But I also think Dez's way is a very hard way too. I feel like it's, it's not necessarily on player. I'm not saying he doesn't care about his players, but I don't think it's about, the player as an individual more isn't about the player as the football player. And I remember, there was a story when he was at Manly that some of the kids had a problem with their diet, so he would actually cook food for them, right? So very hands-on, right? And that shows a great deal of care for his player, but in the context of a rugby league person, right? Whereas I think with Wayne, you look at Benji Marshall, for example, he played with Wayne Bennett when he was at St. George and when he was at Brisbane. But I think, Benji Marshall is a Wayne Bennett guy, right? Like, he's like his mentor. He doesn't see him as just a rugby league coach. They see them as mentors, right? I think that's where Wayne has tapped in, and I think that's why he's had the long-term results. Whereas I think that, I don't know if Craig Bellamy is considered a life mentor to his team. I'm not sure. Like, he could be, but he seems to be more of a very fitness orientated, play orientated type thing. And I think that's the same thing can be said with Dez and Shane and Ricky. I think Kevin Walters is a bit different. I think Kevin Walters, Ivan Cleary, they seem to have a bit more of outside of footy approach. And maybe because their sons are playing in their teams, right? Well, that's the other interesting thing, right? Kevin Walters, Owen Cleary, and Brad Arthur will all coach their sons, right? At one point, I know. Brad Arthur's not there. So, yeah, but that's kind of how I would see it. So I think that's where the old school coaching has a place, but only when we're looking at the development of the individual, not necessarily development of the player. I think that's where the old school coaches can really have success. What do you think about that, Dr. T?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I guess it all boils down to is that old school style getting the outcomes that people want to see? And I guess, you know, like I said, it came up recently because Desi Hasler has been seen to be kind of a bit, bit crazy and angry in the dressing room, which is not something necessarily that some of the other more modern style coaches do. And I guess that sort of raises the point is that regardless of whether, you know, the age of the coach, he definitely, I mean, look, Desi Hasler has looked like he's been 50 since he was 20. I mean, he's that kind of a person. He was probably an old soul from the very beginning. But also he played the same way as he coaches, you know.
Yeah.
No mucking about. Like, you know, if he gets angry, it's because he's angry. You didn't do your job, you know. So therefore you better do your job if you don't want to get your coach angry. You just got to toughen up. Whereas I think nowadays there is definitely more of a case for the more modern coaches having a different type of influence on their players. And look, the concept to me, the one thing I want to say is the consequence of that is I think, you know, in the past, like how often would we hear about player unrest that led to a coach getting sacked? You know, it seems like in the more modern times, it's the players have a lot more power than they used to. You know, if enough players kind of grumble a little bit about a situation, you can see what's happening now in the Rabbitohs. I mean, you've got on paper a really great team, but because of attitude of a few of the so-called leaders in the team, all of a sudden now the coach has an ultimatum, a publicly stated ultimatum put against him. You know, you've got to perform in the Sharks game or you're out. You know, like what's going on? Like in years gone by, you know, you got sacked because you didn't get a war, you know, you didn't do your job. But then it usually was because, you know, you didn't get the best out of your players, not that you had a star-studded lineup and the players didn't perform because you lost the locker room somehow. That's the thing about the modern style of coaching. And we see this across other sports as well. This certainly happens if you follow soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, overseas as well. It's the same sort of thing. You get a lot of, you know, it's the star players that are driving these old school coaches out. You know, certainly some players just don't like to be told the truth about their lack of commitment or their lack of quality or performance. And you only have to look at the situation with Latrell Mitchell. I mean, I don't know if anyone's had an honest conversation with him about, you know, pulling his head in and stop elbowing, stop being a grub, stop doing all these things that's putting yourself in danger and also the team. And I think this is why, you know, I mean, it started off us talking about Des Hasler and others, but the reality is that it's reflected very clearly in the very dire situation that the South Sydney Rabbitohs are in at the moment with Jason Demetrio. It's possible that, you know, it's possible that, look, an old school coaching style, and I'm not saying that he is definitely old school, but, you know, this, I guess this is what happens when you don't apply that kind of reality to the modern player. And I guess that's the point. The point of all this is I think the old school coaching style doesn't necessarily align with the modern game, not because of anything else except it says a lot about the players and the players' resilience and their ability to kind of handle some home truths in a game. And I think it's definitely it comes down to a little bit of that, because I think some clubs are not as resilient as others, and we can see it very clearly. Last word, Tish, before we move on.
Yeah, look, I think we also have to remember, like, the rugby league club entity itself has changed, right? And the role of the coach within that club has changed. I think back in the day when players were semi-professional, I'm not too sure if the coaches were actually fully professional. So as in they were an employee of the club first and then, you know, maybe had a part-time gig second type thing. So obviously the power dynamic has changed, right? Because, you know, you've got a group of 17 or 25 or 30, you know, a group of 30 against one if they're not happy with the coach. So, and they're all employees of the same organization full-time, right? So that's, I think there is a bit of a, I think that's where the dynamic and maybe the way the clubs are structured, they probably have to, give a higher standing to the coach because of the managerial level that comes with it. So, but look, I mean, like, you are right also about Des Hasler. Like, there is I Googled a young Des Hasler to try and see how he looked when he was young, and there's not one photo that Google can find. You know, like a global billion-dollar company, right? Cannot find a young picture of Des. So, yeah, he has looked basically the same age forever. So, but look, I think, I think some clubs need that old head in. So, but hopefully it all gets sorted out at South, and let's hope the Titans can get on the board, in the next round or two, because, you know, we don't want one team to be straggling so far behind the rest of the pack a little bit, which it's going to put enormous pressure for them trying to get value out of this season if that was to occur.
All right, perfectly said. And we're going to move on to tackle number three, which is our Rugby League Republic rolling report card, this time the Dolphins. Here we go. All right, so in this segment, the Rugby League Republic rolling report card, we focus on one club and give our report card on how they are travelling so far this year. And we thought, you know, good opportunity this week to talk about the team that is coming first, surprisingly first at the moment, which is the Dolphins. So we talked about, you know, Wayne Bennett and his sort of style of coaching. And obviously he's brought some success, immediate success, to the Dolphins. They started off, if I remember well, last year as well in their debut season, and then fell away a little bit. So, look, the fact that they're top of the table is possibly a quirk of the fact that they've played some relatively easy teams so far this year. So I don't know how much longer this will last, but let's have a look at how they're going and see if we can predict how they're going to go towards the end of this year. So, look, let me see if I can find – so let's start with our usual kind of categories that we're going to look at. And the first one is attack. So, Tish, over to you. What do you – in terms of a score, what would you give as a score for their attack, A, B, C, et cetera?
Yeah, look, I'm going to give it a solid B. I believe it's their strength, actually. So maybe getting close to an A. Ladder-wise, where are they sitting when it comes to points for? 112. They're sort of in the top, the top few. So, but I think a B is probably a solid score. They're not in the top four for the most points, even leading the comp. So, that probably shows that there is still a little bit of work to be done. A really good balance in their team. The hammer. I think any team that's got the hammer in it, you kind of get a C straight away. Just using the hammer, right? But I think they've also got, they've got an exciting young half and a well-structured team. So I think a B for me.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think they've got some great players there. They've got some really good, exciting players. The hammer, how can you get past the hammer? You got Herbie Farnworth, he's also good in attack. But I think you're right. I think that they've kind of flown under the radar a little bit in terms of their attack as much as anything. They're kind of not even in the top five, I believe, of the highest scoring team so far this year, despite the fact that they've only lost one game this year. So, yeah, I would say a B. What about the defense? I mean, I think if I'm looking at the stats, the defense is actually equal second best. So Storm and Sharks and Warriors are equal best at 72 against, and they're on 73 against, which that's not bad. Like second. They're not equal second. They are second, except there's equal first, only 1 point difference from them.
Yeah. So they've got the third best defense is probably the best way to say it, right?
Yeah, or fourth best, because there's three equal first. Yeah, I'd say B plus for them.
Yeah. I think B plus is a good score. I mean, with their lineup, it's a bit difficult to say, is this team that's going to be renowned for their defense? But obviously they will be. And I think one thing they do have in favor is I don't think you're going to score a long range try against the Dolphins because they have a lot of speed and can mow you down, right? You know what I mean? Like, you know, so that I think is definitely in their favor. So, yeah, I think a B plus is, yeah, I was about to give it an A, but when you said fourth best, I think we just notch it down to a B plus, right? Or an A. A minus, is that slightly better than B plus? I'd say so.
Look, let's bump it up to A minus. Look, I think they've got, you know, they've got the Bromwich boys, they've got Flegler, who also they got Kafusi.
Yeah.
I'm just looking, am I missing someone? Ewan Aiken, they've got I said Flegler as well. Yeah, so they've got some players there that I think it's, you know, their lineup's pretty good in terms of good, strong, you know, defense. And I think it sort of shows that, you know, they're pretty much, they're literally only a penalty goal away from being the best defense in the league at the moment, which is, again, is it a quirk of the fact that they've played easy teams? I'm not sure. And that goes on to my next point about momentum, because, look, they at the moment their record is pretty good. But like I said, they've played some easy teams, and who are they playing next? They're playing
Parramatta. Are they?
Oh yeah, well their run will probably continue then. no, they're not playing Parramatta next. They're playing the Broncos next. That's right.
Yeah.
This Friday. Yeah. So they're you know, who knows? Their winning run might come to an end. Ironically, we'll talk about this later, but the Broncos, who are coming 11th, way heavy favorites against the Dolphins, who are coming first, majorly heavy favorites in the betting. So very ironic given the difference on the scoreboard. So I think, yeah, momentum wise, I think that might stop fairly soon. But yeah, I would say maybe a B. I think they're going well, but I think they're yet to be tested, I would say. What about you?
Yeah, look, yeah, I think momentum. Yeah, maybe it, a B as well, because like, you know, we were talking about the defense. I just realized that they got smashed by the Cowboys first round, and they let in 43 points. Right. So since then, they haven't actually leaked hardly any points at all. Right. You know, 68 points. Oh yeah, 20. Yeah, not a lot of points anyway. Can't do the maths right now. But so I think yeah, they've. But yeah, the Tigers, the Titans, a bye, and the Dragons. So not really, you know, like if you, where they finished up last year, that they haven't really had, apart from the Cowboys being a good team, I don't think they've had a big test yet. So I think definitely momentum is on their side, but the big challenge is coming in the next few weeks with, you know, the Broncos, the Eels, who kind of renowned for being a strong team, the Knights, who finished in the top eight, the Cowboys again. Yeah, I think they're in for, and then the Eagles as well. So quite a number of yeah. So I'll say a C right now. It's halfway. Yeah, halfway is where I could put it.
All right, depth is another sort of dimension that we look at. We've looked at so far, and I think, like I said, if you look at the fact they've got, you know, the Kafusi, the Bromwich boys. In the forwards, in the backs, they've got Flegler, Jermaine Azarko, Cody Nikorima. You've got Katoa, Herbie Farnworth, the Hammer, obviously, Jake Averillo, Robert Jennings as well there. So you've got I think you've got quite a lot of depth across the board. And again, haven't been tested in terms of, you know, if there's an injury, what do they do? But they certainly got, like, even in just the 5/8, they've got, you know, Atoa and Max Plath there, who are their 5/8 at centre, at wings. Or they got Anthony Milford as well on the books there. Eldrick Lee on the wing as well. And so, you know, you've got quite a bit of name players with a bit of reputation behind them. So I'd say for depth, I'd go probably B+, not quite A, because they haven't really been tested yet. But, yeah, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a D. Right.
Really?
Close to an F, yeah. Because, look, I'm on the Code Sports website, and I'm looking at their top 36, and 10 of their players, the Code Sports website doesn't have a photo of those players, and I've never even heard of any of these names. Do you know what I mean? So if their top 36 includes 10 players that, you know, the internet doesn't have photos of, that's a bit scary, right? Because 36 minus 10, and that only leaves you with 26 players left. And then, you know, you talked about, you know, some of the players of experience, but obviously with experience, so there's also age and, you know, injuries when they come, you know, I'd say the older players are a bit more prone to that, right? And then you brought up Anthony Milford, which we haven't heard anything about this year so far. I just wonder if there's a injury to Katoa and Max Plath, which not really a household name, right? You got to substitute the MILF, who has kind of not really had the best run in the last few years. So, yeah, I kind of feel that an injury, yeah, I think they would struggle. I think they would struggle to find. They'll have to blood young players maybe a little earlier than what they would expected if they were to run. Like, you know, they might have a spare for every position, but then if they get two injuries in any one position, particularly a critical position, I think suddenly the wheels can come off very quickly for the Dolphins, because, you know, putting an inexperienced player who could be a gun, but, you know, the risk is quite high for them to really really dip. And I think we kind of saw that last year, right? They did well at the start, and then as soon as they started to get some injuries, you know, that they kind of crashed pretty hard.
Yeah. All right. Let's finish off with strengths and weaknesses. So what do you think are the strengths of the Dolphins this year?
I think Wayne Bennett. Right. I think
yeah.
They've got the coach who's done it before. They've got a coach that players want to play for. They've got a coach that could, you know, steer them in the right direction. They've shown a really good fight to be able to lose by 43 points in the first round, and then come back with a 38-0 defeat, and then, you know, have a bye and then actually continue on their good form. So I think they've shown that they do have a bit of resilience. So I think I'm going to put that on the coach. So I think Wayne Bennett's their biggest strength.
And what about weaknesses?
Depth. I think the depth is but if I'm going to say, I don't think the Dolphins are at the top eight, and I think it purely comes down to, do they have enough players to be able to get there? And I think that the answer to that is no. That's probably why, even though they're doing so well, I can't see them getting the top eight. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell. I think the defense is quite good. The depth is quite good. I don't know. I kind of disagree with you on the depth thing. I do understand that for some of the critical positions, you know, I think we've seen with Parramatta as well. I mean, you could argue that their depth is terrible given the results. And I think, like I said, it's yet to be seen with these guys what happens if there is an injury or something goes wrong. So they're lucky in a way, and, you know, but I think I think they're no less in depth than any other team in the competition. I think they're kind of, most other teams, you know, even the premiers, you know, you lose your halfback and then whoever you've got to replace him is never going to be as good as your star halfback. And so I think they got the same thing here. But I think having a few players from the Storm sort of system helps them a little bit to overcome those kind of differences when something goes wrong. So, yeah, I agree with you with Ryan Bennett and the resilience thing, because I think that's that definitely plays to their strengths there. But, look, if you were to give an overall grade so far this year, what would you give it?
I'm going to give it a C. No, let me give it a B minus, right? Because you know what? They're doing better than what everybody expected, right? So, you know, there's got to be props for that. So, yeah. So, but I think that's where I'd land with them right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think they're not C. I wouldn't say C. I think the fact that they're coming first is a great thing, and it may end up being that they carry this on this stage of the season. No, it's very hard to see this persisting throughout the season. So I think this is a bit of a prediction more than anything, that they're not probably going to be as high as they are now towards the end of the year, but we shall see. So I'd agree. B minus for me. So let's have a look back at the Dolphins later in the year and see how they're going. But so far, it's like so far so good, but could be a bit better. Could be a bit more impressive in terms of the teams that they've played. And we'll find out after this Broncos match as well how they go. All right, tackle number four, we're going to talk about another different expansion corner. And this time we're going to talk about Perth. All right, so in this segment, we're going to focus on one area for potential expansion of the greatest game of all. We're focusing on Perth. I think last week, who did we focus on last week? I think we focused on Fiji. So this time we're turning our attention to Perth. Let's see what happens. Look, there are bids galore. I'm not necessarily focused on a particular bid. I want to actually, you know, so it's not about saying, oh, I actually think the Perth Bears isn't as good as the West Coast Pirates or whatever. No, whatever the bid is, we're trying to just look at Perth as an area and just say, is this a good opportunity for expansion? So if we stick to that, then that will be great, because I think once the bids come in, then we'll be in a good position to go, okay, this is actually a good area that that we should expand into. So I guess the elephant in the room, Tish, is, you know, Perth potentially being the next team in the NRL. I guess the question is it a genuine expansion area, or would it just be a dot on the map? You know, people talk about it's just purely an East Coast game at the moment. Nothing west of Melbourne. We've got two cities, Adelaide and Perth, that are not represented at the moment. Perth is probably the most likely to be an option, a viable option. But, yeah, what do you reckon? Well, maybe we can leave it until the end. But, you know, your first impressions, is Perth a genuine expansion area, or is it only in the mix of our discussion because it would be a very strategic dot on a map?
Yeah, I think definitely it's a strategic move rather than a realistic move. We had the experience with the Western Reds years ago, and they went from 95 to I think 98, maybe 97, because of obviously the whole Super League drama and everything. So, you know, is it time to go back there? I think it's still a little too early. I don't know. We need to move more State of Origin games there, I think, for at least another 5 or 6 years of going there with State of Origin games and really trying to, you know, get the baby steps towards a game there. Because, you know, I had a friend of mine who did actually, you know, go to Perth. He was doing some mining work, and he was a regularly tragic as well. And I just remember him saying that there was no coverage anywhere, right? So it's like completely blank. And I think it's probably not as bad as like the NRL trying to get into the US, but I think it's the similar sort of challenge. I still think that despite even having a bit of a rugby league, or having a rugby league team there, having a rugby union, I think even rugby union has more of a heritage there than actual rugby league. So definitely I feel like a bit of a long shot for the moment. I don't know if it's one of the, I'd say it's more of a 5 to 10 year thing than a 1 to 5 year thing, my opinion. Yeah.
Look, well, you've summarized quite a lot of things there. There's a few sort of aspects to this that I just wanted to raise, and obviously the support, you know, when you've got AFL as a major, major competitor there, your attention will be very much starved in terms of the sporting imagination there. So that's going to be a huge barrier right off the bat, you know, to expanding to an AFL area. I think the stadium is a beautiful stadium, obviously very new and, you know, has seen success at State of Origin. I think you're right. We need to see more examples of using that stadium and then that stadium being the home ground really of whatever a future Perth team will look like. So basically the infrastructure is there. I think the financials will be there as well. I think Perth, I saw recently, is again, a real estate booming area, which tells you that there's a lot of money flowing there, a lot of things happening. It is a boom area once again, maybe not as much as it was before. So financially, I think they would have, you know, like a monopoly in terms of rugby, you know, non-AFL attention, and therefore the backing of lots of financial, you know, financial backing from lots of companies there. So I think that's probably a benefit more than anything, is that, in, you know, even though we might think, well, nothing's really happening there, the fact that there is a lot of money going into that state and into Perth in particular is absolutely really relevant. The other bit, however, that I'm a bit concerned about is the historical aspect. So you mentioned that Western Reds was, you know, fairly successfully a successful team until they had the split in the Super League and ARL, and then it was a casualty of the merger back into NRL. And I think the fact that there was a historical, I guess you could say, a failed team, a team that didn't exist for very long, and you know, that could actually work against the Perth as an expansion area, ironically, because I think some of the other teams that have been talked about have not had any emotional historical baggage as opposed to what Perth does. So I think that's an issue. If I'm going to sort of give my judgment as you have about Perth as an area, I think it's definitely an expansion area that we should look into. If the NRL decides, you know, we've only got space for one more team in the next few years, I'm not certain whether Perth is that one team. However, if you were to say we've got, you know, a five-year plan and we're going to get three teams in the next 5 years, then I think Perth is a shoo-in. It has to be. It has to be one of the teams. We have to expand strategically west and take advantage of the booming kind of industry and economy at the moment that they have there. So, look, that's my final say. I think it definitely is a strategic dot on the map, but also a definite, genuine expansion area. I think the other thing I sort of didn't mention is, you know, yes, AFL dominates everything, but they also have a team there, don't they, in the Super Rugby, Western Force or whatever it is. I don't know if it's gone kaput at the moment. But, look, regardless of that, I think there's definitely a suggestion that, you know, out of some of the other teams that have been bandied about, we've already got a bit of a foothold there in terms of rugby union. So it wouldn't be too much to kind of, you know, persuade, entice a whole generation of young rugby league fans over from the rugby union game to this game. So I think potentially, you know, yes, you've got to change hearts and minds, but there's a lot at play there, and definitely a lot that can be done. But yeah, I would say Perth is definitely one for the future, especially if they're going to bring in more than one team in the next few years. I think they're definitely in contention in the top three or so. Tish, shall we move on to tackle number five?
Well, I just done a quick bit of research on the Reds. Perth, and I just want to say, I actually think they could come sooner, but the key is Kalyn Ponga, because he's actually born in Western Australia, right? And I think that's dynamite. So I actually think we need to take advantage of that, because, like, I know what I've also heard about Perth and Western Australia is that they do cherish their own a lot more than other states, like a bit more, you know, they're kind of ultra focused on this. But so I think if you know, if the Knights took some games, if we played an Origin and Kalen sort of starring there, I think that's what's going to actually grow the game a lot more than having a team there right at the moment.
All right, fair enough. You've had the last say. Let's move on to tackle number five. We're going to do a very quick tribute to Keith Barnes. All right, so the rugby league world has recently been left saddened by the news of the death of former Australia captain and NRL Hall of Famer Keith Barnes, a legend of the Balmain Tigers Club, passed away Monday morning at Sydney's Prince of Wales Hospital. He was 89. Tish, do you want to continue the rest of the short tribute to Keith Barnes as a Tigers fan?
Well, yeah, so Keith Barnes was nicknamed Golden Boots for his prestigious kicking ability, and accuracy at goal was regarded as one of the true, and he was regarded as one of the true gentlemen of the sport. He played 194 games for the Balmain Tigers between 1955 and 1966, and played part in three grand finals during his time at the club. He was considered one of the finest fullbacks of his era and one of the greatest rugby league players of the 20th century. Kicked 742 goals during his first grade career for Balmain. And Barnes only ever played first grade footy for Balmain and finished his career with 11 tries and 1,519 points for the club. Amazing, right? So, Barnes was iconic as a Tigers figure, and he had the grandstand at Leichhardt Oval named after him in 2009. He had a career also that included 17 tests for Australia, with Barnes captaining the Kangaroos in 14 of them. He played the 1915 and 1957 and 1960 World Cups, as well as a career Kangaroos tour of Europe in 1959. And that's thanks to Yahoo Sports, who's got that article. I know that after he played the game, he might have also been the colour commentator. He might have been part of the first duo of commentating for rugby league on television, right? So a true pioneer, not just in the sport, but also in the broadcasting of it. So But I never actually heard his commentary or anything like that. But I think that, we just got to honour, players of that era, who have sort of, rugby league went through all these different phases and periods, and each one of the players throughout all the ages are very important. And we wouldn't have rugby league today if the Keith Barnes and the players of his generation didn't keep rugby league alive and didn't keep rugby league at the forefront of our community and society. So, and always a gentleman of the game. I've never heard anybody say anything negative towards Keith Barnes. And that's definitely a glowing thing to remember somebody by. So, I think we're, as rugby league fans, supporters, everybody who loves rugby league, I think it's it is a sad day to hear about the passing. Your thoughts, Dr. T?
Yeah, look, I completely agree with everything you've said. And look, in addition to that, I'd have to say, as an Eels fan, definitely, and also, like as I said, as a childhood kind of Balmain Tigers fan, definitely Keith Barnes was one of the voices. He had a glittering career as a Balmain Tiger and also an Australian, captain of the Kangaroos as well on 14 occasions. So, he was very well respected and well regarded amongst not just Tigers fans, but, all fans and all administrators and anyone really that came after him in the game, gave him the due respect. And, it's interesting because recently we've also heard kind of the opposite thing happening with the West Tigers. And I think we spoke about, Steve Roach and Ben Elias recently coming out and saying, that they felt that they were kind of not really respected by the West Tigers after the merger, and that they were kind of like shunned a little bit given given that they've already had, you know, a successful post-playing career. And look, I think Barnes didn't have the opportunity to interact with the West Tigers that much. You know, and certainly he also commanded, I guess, respect more than a lot of the players of his generation. And that has a lot to do with the fact that the way he played the game was a straight shooter. You know, he was a goal scorer mainly rather than a try scorer, but he definitely, upped the game in terms of, you know, at the time that he represented Australia. You know, he not only played a part in them making the grand final, unfortunately they never won, but definitely also when he played in the Kangaroos tour in 1959, I mean, it was that really that started the dominance of the Kangaroos after that point in time. So he certainly had a pioneering role in all of that. Very well respected amongst not just Tigers fans, but fans of other clubs as well, as you mentioned. And that kind of respect sort of led him to then be named in the Hall of Fame in 2009. When was it? It doesn't say. Sorry, I thought I saw he became a Hall of Famer, but that may not be the case. But look, he deserves to be if he's not already there. Definitely a golden boots for a reason. Prodigious, prolific goal kicker. And, you know, we don't get too many of those nowadays. Nowadays you just, you know, you get players and then some of them happen to know how to kick goals, but not ones that are specialists and really known for it like they used to be in eras gone by. Look, so we're going to dedicate this episode to Keith Barnes and, you know, condolences to his family on our behalf, and family and friends who no doubt are mourning a great man who has made it to 89 years of age. All right, let's move on to tackle number 6. We're going to talk about the NRL, the round 6 tips for the NRL. Here we go. All right, after round 6 round 5, you did pretty well. You got 7 out of 8, which is amazing. I think that's your best. The only one you missed out on was the Roosters being gazumped by the Bulldogs, whereas I am typically below 50%. So you could flip a coin, Tish, and do better than what I'm doing at the moment. I got 3 out of 8. My total for the year is 19, and you're on 26, so you're already 7 ahead of me.
I think everybody's a genius, thinks I'm a genius because I got Manly out of the Penrith right, which I'm like, I don't know how, but I got that one somehow. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's see if you can continue your tipping, because here are the tips for round 6, so let's launch into it. So round 6 starts off on Thursday night with the Newcastle Knights at home to Sydney Roosters. I'm tipping the Knights in maybe a minor upset here.
I'm tipping the Knights at home as well.
All right, Melbourne Storm versus Canterbury Bulldogs at Amy Park, Friday 6 p.m. game. I'm tipping the Storm.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Storm as well.
This is a difficult one. Broncos, Dolphins, 11th versus 1st. But according to the bookies, the Broncos are heavy favourites, and I would have to agree with that. I think they've shown very strong quality in the last couple of games in particular. At Suncorp Stadium, it is a local derby, but I think the Broncos will win this one.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Dolphins. I think they've marked this one in their calendar that they're going to pull out a performance here. So I think the Dolphins.
All right. Saturday, 3 p.m. at GoMedia Stadium in Auckland, you have the Warriors against Manly. It's going to be a good one, but I think the Warriors will triumph in this one.
Yeah, probably the match at around so far it looks like, but I'm going to tip the Warriors like you. I think they can do it.
All right, the Eels and the Cowboys at CommBank Stadium, Saturday, 5:30 p.m. I'm going to go against the Eels. I think they have no chance. The Cowboys are going to win this one.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Cowboys as well.
All right, South Sydney versus the Sharks at Accor Stadium, Saturday 7:30 game. I think the Sharks are specials for this one.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think with everything happening at South, it's going to be hard to tip them this week.
All right. Tigers-Dragons at Campbelltown at 4 o'clock. I don't think Campbelltown is traditionally a cauldron or a, you know, for the Tigers. I think not as much as Leichhardt Oval. But I think they're still going to win against the Dragons. I think the Dragons are a bit of a shambles as well. But the Tigers are doing pretty good this year.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Dragons, actually, because, I'm not sure about the Tigers. I think Campbelltown doesn't have that heritage. And I think, plus, it's probably easier to get to from Wynn Stadium to Campbelltown Stadium than what it is to get to from Concord, right? So kind of on that one, but yeah.
All right, and finally, Sunday, 6:15 p.m., again, the last game of the round at GIO Stadium in Canberra. It sees the Raiders versus the Titans. I'm tipping the Raiders. It is the battle of former 80s halfback coaches.
Yeah, look, I'm going to tip the Raiders. I think, they're in for a great season. So, yeah.
All right, and the Penrith Panthers have the bye. And, look, that's it. That wraps up the podcast, episode 303. Thank you very much, Tish. Over to you to wrap things up.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. That's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We're your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.